Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center, deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. Our guest this episode is Professor Emeritus at National Intelligence University, NIU. Our guest this episode is an expert on various forms of economic studies. V.L. Lanny Elliott was a professor emeritus at the National Intelligence University. He taught the economic study of instability and conflict, terrorism as a form of war strategy, and the role of intelligence in national security strategy. Professor Elliott has also worked in various elements of the U.S. national security community, including the Executive Office of the President, the State and Energy Departments, the Advisory Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, and the Agency for International Development. This is just a short list of his accomplishments during his career of service to our nation. Professor Lanny Elliott is no longer an active staff member with NIU, and his participation in the discussion today is strictly as a private citizen, and in no way will he represent the views and opinions of the National Intelligence University during our discussion today. Professor Lanny Elliott, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Thank you very much, Preston. It's an honor to be with you today.
It's a pleasure having you. And man, your bio is very, very impressive, and man, you've done a lot of stuff in your short tenure on this earth.
Well, I just had my 80th birthday, so it doesn't seem quite so short at this side.
Well,
I did get pushed along a bit and sometimes ended up doing a couple of things at once.
Well, yeah, I think a few of us have had that luxury. But,
yes.
You know, we honor you, and we're happy to have you on our show. And I look forward to our discussion today about some of the things that we see going on in the United States and around the world economically and how that affects us.
We are in an extraordinary period of economic activity, volatility, and change, and I believe that it can at times become overwhelming.
Yes, and one of the reasons why we asked to have you on the show is to help us understand some of these forces that are driving what we see today, which is it looks very bad, very bleak for our nation as we look forward to more of this crazy spending that they want to do, these policies that they want to enact. And it's just mind-boggling how these people seem to just continue and drive this narrative of spend, spend, spend. There's an actual philosophy behind that, is there not?
Yes. Yeah, there it really has roots in what has become Keynesian economics, but a related line of thought has emerged in more recent years called modern monetary theory. And basically debt the burdens of national debt are swept under the rug, ignored, forgotten. And I believe that that is a serious mistake.
Hmm.
The idea would be that if you have economic slowdown and pump money into the economy, liquidity, that people will spend us out of that out of the decline. But things have become much more complicated since Keynes first introduced his ideas back in the 1930s. Mansur Olson, a University of Maryland economist in the 1980s, came up with the idea of stagflation, in which you have both economic slowdown and inflation underway, and it impedes the use of what Keynesians would think of as the best way to deal with the economic problems that we see, and it poses a much greater burden on economic decision makers to find out what the actual root cause is. And that's very important, because as the economy slows down and as it breaks down, we see loss of systems. For example, the shipping problems and the wait times off the West Coast ports have resulted in loss of jobs for truckers, for truck mechanics, for people all the way up and down the marketing finance chain between the landing of the goods and retail sales point. It's hard to rebuild those systems, and I do not see an effective effort as yet being put into place to do so.
Hmm. So there was another driver with that, and it was this biological attack from the Wuhan lab.
Yes.
And do you think that that whether it was China acting alone or in concert with others, do you think that was a driving force to help degrade our economy here at home, but also around the globe?
Well, there isn't any doubt that it had that effect. I mean, there are many points you can debate and have been debated about. Was this a consciously developed weapon, and was it used as a military attack? I won't get into that now, but there's no doubt that the way it was dispersed, where people were not allowed to travel out of Wuhan, were not allowed to travel within China, but could travel all over the world, particularly into northern Italy and some of the northeastern U.S. states. And the results, well, we see them. Many, many, many dead all over the world. And economic impediments put in place that have just really knocked us for a loop. Now, the U.S. economy had a lot of steam behind it going into the pandemic, or whatever you want to call it, and some of that remained and started bringing us out. But there are more policy impediments that have gone into place. The inability to move, to freely go into stores to purchase, et cetera, in some places, have wiped out entire industries, such as the problems that the New York restaurant and service industries have had. And we're going to be a while getting those replaced or recovered. And I'm not I'm glad that I don't have the task of having to put it back together again, because this is a big job.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Now, how does our current environment affect where we go in the future? Now, we see forces, insurgent forces, in our government and in our, even down to our local school boards, trying to install these policies that are designed to tear apart our nation and to re-educate our youth. And there's definitely a global Marxist cabal that's working to do this. You know, Hillary Clinton used to say the right grand right wing conspiracy. Well, actually, she was mirroring what they are doing and have been doing for decades of tearing this country apart with their grand leftist, left-wing Marxist conspiracy.
Byron York recently published a book on the great left-wing conspiracy. So at least we have a check on former Secretary Clinton's arguments.
I'm going to have to look for that book.
It's a pretty good book. The argument, I mean, I understand your argument, and I think you're right that it's a battle of, on one level, it's a battle of ideas, but it has gone beyond that. The ideas have been debated for a long time. I had thought that they were pretty well settled after the Soviet Union collapse back in the late 80s and early 90s. I guess they haven't. They haven't. Those ideas certainly haven't gone away and have been pushed in some areas. We see it with the critical race theory. That is, those arguments are consistent with the arguments for socialism, the collectivization of society, and the result is what we've come to recognizes the expected in the economic slowdown, restriction on individual freedoms. And until fairly recently, there has not been an effective pushback. I do see at the local levels, and for example, the Loudoun County parents coming out, there's one Lady Tiffany Politko, who has just done wonders in that county. And then you see the efforts to audit the last election and to the precinct strategy group that is looking to revitalize the Republican Party. There are things being done, but one of the hallmarks of the leftist has been a strong central direction dating back into the pre-Soviet Union days, into the 19th century, and that organizational capability is very effective.
So, what can we look for? Because some of your writings have been on terrorism and insurgency. What can we look for to identify some of this insurgent activity that's going on right in front of us that we may not necessarily identify?
I think that the blatant disregard for existing law is one example. You see what happened in Portland, Minneapolis and other cities last year, an extreme example, but the case in Wisconsin in Racine County, the sheriff has recently finished in investigating and released a report on, was very pointed in laying out that in several cases, the governor said that, with regard to the 2020 election, said that the governor did not have the authority to ignore existing laws, and yet subordinate members of the executive branch of the Wisconsin state government went ahead and knowingly and consciously violated the law, apparently are still doing so, or at least they were up until the sheriff's report came out. And it looks like, according to the sheriff's press conference, that this pattern of behavior took place in other counties of Wisconsin. Now, that's not, I don't think they have proven that. They're making an assumption based upon what they saw in Racine County, one of the larger counties, I believe, in Wisconsin. But these are examples. Now, the other education, when you go, one of the things you have to do is gain influence over how children think. And there's clearly the question of what's happening to the smaller children. But you have to remember that military age children, or children reach military age in most of the world in their mid to late teens. And that's a prime recruitment pool for hardcore revolutionaries. We saw it in Vietnam, we saw it in Cambodia, Cuba. So it's something that we have to pay attention to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the Middle East, they do it that young
as
well.
Oh, yes. And that's not necessarily Marxist-Leninist, but in a different line of philosophy, but using the same mechanisms that go back a long way.
Hmm. So these things that you identified, they're in our face right now. And there's so many things going on at the same time. Do you think it's their intent to overwhelm our senses with all these different activities? Is that part of their strategy, or is it just dumb luck?
That's
on their
Psy War, part of their Psy War strategy. We do need to pay very strong attention to it and to confront these ideas in open debate so that people can make their own judgments. Invariably, the socialists lose out in these debates, up to the point that in the more extreme cases, they start using physical as well as psychological and social methods of coercion and take over people. And we can go back and trace this through Tsarist Russia and its transformation into the Soviet Union, in China under Mao, Cambodia under Pol Pot, Castro's Cuba, more recently in Venezuela, and there were efforts underway in Brazil back in the 50s with Carlos Marighella's attempts to foment a rebellion there. That didn't succeed at all, but Marighella was a great, great threat.
Yeah, I noticed that in Loudoun County, the school board there is asking the sheriff's office to have a huge staff on hand at the next meeting, and the sheriff responded with, "We're not going to do that. That's not necessary." And that's good that this elected official, the sheriff, has declined to support these Marxists that are trying to ruin the kids' lives in Loudoun County.
Yes. There were several sheriffs throughout Virginia who made similar related types of statements and commitments and have lived up to it when the Second Amendment issues came up a couple of years ago. And basically, they are following out their oath to obey lawful orders. And the orders that are being given to them, in some cases, are constitutionally at least in question, if not clearly unconstitutional. So I think that's a very positive sign that the Loudoun County Sheriff has recognized the nature of the orders or requests that he's receiving and stood by the constitutions of the United States and Virginia and obeyed the law.
Yes, yes. It's good to hear, especially in Loudoun County, which has been left-leaning for a long time, that the sheriff realizes that his bread is buttered by the taxpayers, not by the Marxists in the school board. So that's that's a good development. And I've seen that video over an hour, like an hour and a half of video from the Racine County Sheriff's Office. That is encouraging, and I suspect that there's probably other states, especially in the swing states, that were doing the same thing. So there's so many things that need to be addressed. And anybody who says we don't need to have a forensic audit of the entire nation is living in dream world, or they're part of the problem. Because there's no reason not to give our country the satisfaction and knowledge that our elections are free and not corrupt in any way, which I believe they've been corrupt for decades.
It is essential. I mean, where do we begin if we do not have election systems and election officials and elections that we can depend on?
Yes. Well, if we turn into a third world country.
If we don't deal with that, and it's not a left or right issue, it's not Democrat or Republican, this is everyone in the country who wants a real country.
Yes, yes. You know, I've been saying for a while that if things go too bad here, we're going to devolve into nation states. And, you know, there'll be us versus them kind of thing. And who knows, maybe even certain states will be broken up into many pieces, you know, depending on who's got what territory. So
yeah, the eastern counties of Oregon have voted to secede or go along that line. I don't know if secession is the right term to use. There are the three western counties of Maryland are discussing doing something similar to that. And the tensions between the northern Virginia counties and the rest of Virginia they're not trivial.
No, no. There's definitely trouble in La La Land here. But
yes.
So in the last couple minutes, can you give us a summation of where we're at and where we're headed, so to speak?
Well, the economic data being reported as opposed to the financial data. Financial markets are a subset of the economy, but they are not the economy itself. And we're seeing the economic data looking very much like a serious downturn. Yesterday, I think the last quarter's growth rate was knocked down from a low 2.7% estimate to 2%. We've got significant unemployment, which is amazing to me, since we've got about as many unfilled jobs as we do unemployed people in the country. But we do have several million unemployed. And we are not seeing strong incentives to invest, which is the principal investments that I see going on are characterized by some of the new technologies. You spoke about the cryptocurrencies and how they are becoming far more prominent than I would ever have believed 10 years ago. My reading is that we are in need of some significant policy change that mobilizes investment, particularly small business investment, which is where you are most likely to get growth-generating entrepreneurial innovation. And we need to keep an eye on the tax burden. One of the really significant improvements that we saw in the economy over the last several years has been the cutback on that President Trump initiated on the regulatory burden, and that really had really resulted in a great deal of productive mobilization of resources. If we don't get those production-related policy reforms, I think we're in for some rough sledding. And we do see inflation with all the money that's been created, not just in the United States, but around the world for the last 20 years. It's got to start popping up somewhere, and when it does, it has a price effect. Mm. Well, we're seeing it now in, for example, the grocery shelves and in energy, which is made worse by the fact that we have, because of government policy changes, we have significantly affected the supply of energy being produced in the United States. So I think that we're in for a contentious period of debate. Hopefully it is only debate, mm-hmm. Over what our economic policy should be. And I really don't see an effective opposition to administration policies in the legislative branch. I do see mobilization of people, but dispersed, not highly centralized, and we'll just have to watch and see what happens. I guess the elections are in Virginia and New Jersey are considered to be a watershed by some. I don't know. I'll have to wait and see what happens. But it does, I think we're in need of people stepping up, making their views known in a constructive manner, peaceful but firm, and holding the elected representatives to account for the policies that they support, advocate, or just let go.
Yeah.
Wish I could be more more hopeful.
Yeah. It's a very, very precarious time that we live in right
yes.
now. It's, we're either going to destroy ourselves with the policies of the left, or we're going to push them out by any means necessary and restore our republic to what it was designed to be. And in order to do that, we will also have to rout the left completely. Rush Limbaugh used to say, we can't just defeat them in a simple election. We have to defeat them and destroy them and get them out. And that is, I believe, what needs to be done, because the left is all about demonic policies that destroy and not build up. And so that's going to have to be the last word. Thank you, Professor Lanny Elliott. Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based, grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. Be sure to check out our regular postings on Facebook. I'm really not liking Facebook anymore. They keep threatening to put me in jail, but they're... You know, that's where we're at. Telegram at Civil Defense Radio Channel, MeWe at Civil Defense Radio, and Civil Defense Radio Channel at YouTube as well. So most of the items that we post are important information about the many threats we see to our safety and security as a nation. So please listen and act. This is not a time to just listen and then go about your business and be happy and carefree. This is a time of action. So, you know, as our friend says, stock up, group up, and train up. Be sure to do that. You need to stock up food, water, capabilities, weapons, ammo, because when the going gets tough, only the tough will be able to survive. So I wish to thank our guest, Professor Lanny Elliott, again for being on our show, and you, our American and international friends who listen to us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.